This is the Concealed Carry Podcast, episode number 92. And welcome to the Concealed Carry Podcast, part of the ConcealedCarry.com network, and I'm your host, Riley Bowman.
Riley, the man who prefers driving to commercial flying. That's true. I'm Jacob Paulson.
And Jacob is the guy who wants to be the last person to board the plane.
Yep. Don't know what the big incentive is about getting on there early.
Well, so you make sure you get plenty of storage in the bin, right?
Well, that might have been true like 5 years ago when everyone had carry-ons to avoid paying for luggage. But now that you have to pay for carry-ons on most flights, on most airlines, it's like, screw it. The checking the bag is cheaper than carrying it on, and so there's plenty of bin space.
Yes. And by the way, I really like flying. In fact, I'd love to be a pilot myself. I just hate commercial flying. So just is not cool to me. Anyway, today's topic, by the way, is we've titled this Myth or Fact, CCWer accidentally shooting another CCWer during a response, which we had a listener. In fact, we've had more than one listener, I believe, kind of write into us or whatever and kind of say, hey, could you talk about the situation of what to do if there's two CCWers that are responding to a active threat or a deadly force situation? So we're going to break that down today with a lot of excellent tips and suggestions. So stay tuned for all that. But first, on this day in history, 2003, the Columbia mission ends in disaster. And boy, this is definitely fresh enough that it's very vivid in my memory, and I'm sure is the same for you.
Yeah, it was just 2003, right? So yeah, yep. 2003. Yeah. So it's not that long ago. And man, that was ugly.
Yeah, it was. You know, it was, if you think about it, we went for, I can't remember exactly how many missions, but it was well over 100 missions since the Challenger disaster, which, by the way, the anniversary of that was just like 2 days ago. And that happened back in 1980, what was it, 85, I think, was Challenger, or 84, somewhere around there. Anyway, the Columbia mission, like I said, it had been hundreds of missions, or at least 100 or so, since that disaster. And yeah, I think we kind of got into this. Well, you remember, you'd hear it in the news all the time. Hey, you know, a space shuttle went to space, and it came back, and it went back up, and it came back. You know, like, it just got very commonplace, and I think people took it for granted. And this definitely reminded everybody just how dangerous space travel can be.
Yeah, yeah, the major drama all happened within the Earth, like, within our atmosphere. Like, the original damage, and obviously the re-entry is where all the problems were.
Yeah, it was 80 seconds into the launch when a piece of foam insulation broke off from the shuttle's propellant tank and hit the front edge of the shuttle's left wing. And it, you know, they didn't know for certain just how bad that damage was. And unfortunately, they found out when they tried to re-enter the Earth's atmosphere. And a report sometime later discovered that they may have had a chance of repairing that damage while in space. And if they couldn't have done that, they may have been able to move up the launch of the Atlantis shuttle by just a few days later and get up there and rescue the crew members on the Columbia. And so, you know, fortunately, hindsight is 20/20. You know, that's just the way it goes, unfortunately. And this was tragic for everybody involved, and it was tragic for our country as well. So, anyway, just a reminder, folks, maybe take a moment and ponder on that and remember the lives that were lost on that fateful day. But now let's move to 17.
Yeah, back that up.
Yeah. 90, when the first session of the U.S. Supreme Court was held. And I just think this is really cool. And Jacob, do you know who the first Chief Justice of the Supreme Court was?
John Jay, appointed by John Adams. Probably the most influential thing that President John Adams ever did. John Jay was an amazing leader, and really, he grew that Supreme Court into what we believe it and, you know, understand it to be today.
Right. Absolutely. And I thought this was really appropriate to be our you know, this day in the history today, since it was just yesterday that President Trump announced who his Supreme Court nominee is going to be to replace Justice Scalia. Did you see that in the news?
I did. I haven't had much chance to research the name, but I did see the announcement.
Well, did you at least see where he's from?
No.
Oh, man. And you call yourself a Coloradan.
I call myself a Wyomingite, but that's okay.
I know. But I know how much you love Colorado. So the Supreme Court nominee is Neil Gorsuch, who is a Colorado native, fourth generation native. Sweet. And is in the is he the appeals court or federal court? I can't remember which, but he's in the federal court right here in downtown Denver. And he's been picked for the Supreme Court. And I think Justice John Jay would probably agree very much with Neil Gorsuch's viewpoints on the Constitution. Is kind of
we'll see if we can get that through the Senate, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So there you go. This day in history, a couple interesting things. And so before I forget, today's episode is brought to you by Guardian Nation. And we'll have a message about that in a little bit. Also, we'll have a reminder of something we've got going on that's pretty dang exciting. And Jacob's got an update on some prizes we're going to give away. So stay tuned for that towards the end of the episode. So without any further ado, let's get into today's topic, Jacob, which is myth or fact. Is there a problem with a CCWer shooting another CCWer when responding to the same situation?
Yeah, that's a good question. I've actually had to put a lot of brain power behind this because, you know, oftentimes we tend to kind of learn and grow by thinking about things that have happened. And when we first had this question come in, I thought, surely this has happened before, right? But I can't think of a single instance. And you did some more research about this, right?
Yeah, well, we've looked into this, and I just gave some of my thoughts. I kind of think on the surface, I would take a lot of the same approach that I would take when dealing with law enforcement that might be arriving to a scene, and I'm a concealed carrier engaging the situation already, which we've kind of covered in the podcast in past episodes. I can't recall exactly which ones they would be, it is a valid point. It's a valid concern, just because I think we should always try to be aware of these sorts of things and the potential of these sorts of things to occur. And, you know, has things like blue on blue, shootings occurred, accidentally? Absolutely. In fact, we had one in recent memory right here in Lakewood a few years ago, where unfortunately, a police officer, one that I actually happen to kind of know. My kids go to school with one of his kids. And he was shot and killed by one of his fellow officers. And unfortunately, it happened because really, at the root of it was a lack of communication. So I think it's going to become very clear to people as we go through the podcast today how important communication is in any of these situations.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's just one of those things where the other thing that occurred to me is despite our inability to find any examples of this having ever happened, that said, the number of people who have permits is growing all the time. Perhaps the argument could be made that the odds of this kind of situation happening are higher than they ever have been.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We have more CCWers than ever, I think, in history in our country now. More guns probably than ever out there being carried. And so definitely the probability of this occurring is higher than it used to be. Although the interesting thing is I did a search, Jacob, before we started prepping for this. And I've kind of looked for this before, at least anecdotally, or at least just kind of like always keeping my eye out for it. And I was looking in the news, looking for news stories or incidents where one CCWer shot another CCWer, and they were both trying to stop a bad guy. Because I was able to find at least one, and I'm sure there's probably more actually, but at least one incident that happened not too long ago. And I think we even reported on it, a story, I think out of Michigan, where a CCWer and another CCWer got in some sort of altercation.
Sure.
And they shot each other. And that is very unfortunate, but that's not the type of situation we're talking about here. We're talking about a situation where there's an active threat against somebody and a concealed carrier responds to that threat, but then a third party CCWer also steps in and maybe doesn't know how to sort out the situation.
Correct. Yeah, that's what we're focused on. So despite not being able to find a single example of this having ever happened, that's the topic of today's episode.
Right. So that's actually okay. Interesting way of putting that, Jacob. It, you know, it's like, okay, why bother talk about it? Well, we talk about it because there's always a first time for everything. And I certainly hope that it's not one of our podcast listeners that would be the first instance recorded that, you know, that we know of that were, unfortunately, they either shot another CCWer or they got shot themselves.
Well, two other things that are relevant, and then we'll, I think we might be ready to dive in, but things that come to my mind. The first one is, it could be that the other person who's responding, whether the initial respondent to the threat or the now secondary respondent to the threat, it doesn't have to be a CCWer for this conversation to apply. It could be an undercover or off-duty cop. So that's another Absolutely. Thing to kind of throw into the mix is it could be just an ununiformed officer that all these same principles would apply in that situation as well. So that would be one thing to consider. Another thing that kind of I was thinking through is, at the end of the day, if we've had two different listeners to this podcast contact us and say, what if this happens? It must be on people's minds. I don't know why. I never thought about it before. But obviously, this is something that you, our community, is thinking about. So we need to address it regardless.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm going to have a story to share. And I'm pretty sure I've shared this story on the podcast before about, you mentioned plainclothes or off-duty police. And so I'm going to go ahead and share that again at some point when appropriate as well. Explaining how that can happen, and if handled in the wrong way, I mean, we definitely could be making that sort of mistake where we end up shooting a police officer, and that is definitely a real possibility. Now, recently in the news, by the way, I was just thinking about this. We've actually had a couple incidences, two very close to each other, since it's not something that happens very often necessarily, but maybe it's happening more often now, or maybe it will be happening more often. I mean, we already know culturally across this nation, there's a lot of hate towards blue, towards our men and women in blue. And I think some criminals have been emboldened to, as far as taking greater risk and doing, or making greater effort to hurt or injure police officers. And so, unfortunately, maybe we'll see more of these types of incidences where a civilian steps in to help a cop out.
We had a uniformed cop.
Right.
On duty.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we had, still fighting that cold, darn it. We had that one in Florida. And also then just most recently, the one in Arizona.
Yeah.
In both situations, a police officer getting attacked. In the Arizona one, he was actually shot at, I believe. And then in Florida, it was a physical altercation, but could have turned deadly for that officer. And in both cases...
his head was being slammed into the pavement.
Right. Yeah. Right. And in both instances, I mean, the common thread is that these cops asked for help. They called for help. They could see somebody was nearby and basically said, please help me. And that's, it's pretty clear. In other words, what I'm going to say here, and I've said this before on the podcast, always, always, always be careful involving yourself as a third party in other people's problems.
Yeah. And I think that's probably the right place to start on this topic is there's two sides to this. One is what I'll call the mindset side, and the other one is more the tactical applicable side. On the mindset side, don't forget that as a tribe, as a community, the concealed carrier community, our primary objective is the defense of ourselves and our loved ones. And so there's got to be what I'll call like a higher standard, a higher issue at play for us as a community to get involved in some altercation that goes above and beyond just defending ourselves and our family, right? If my primary objective is my preservation, the preservation of my wife, my children, and other people I care a ton about, then in order for me to go out above and beyond that, to actively involve myself in others, there's got to be some significant you know, thing going on there. I mean, it's probably that I really can feel, you know, some great sense that my family is safe and I'm only putting my own life on the line. Or I feel that, you know, that the nature of the situation is that I really can do this in a way where I'm not putting myself in a great deal of risk. Or maybe I just am one of those noble, blessed souls in this country who doesn't mind putting myself at risk to save, you know, innocent people. I don't know, which there's nothing wrong with that. But I just want to remind, you know, our audience that ultimately as a tribe, our goal or objective is the preservation of our own lives and the lives of our loved ones. And so we need to approach everything with that defensive mindset, not this mindset of, I hear shots being fired, I'm going to go stop them, whatever they are from wherever they're, you know, without any sense of what's going on.
Right. And those are good thoughts, Jacob. And you've certainly touched on that before in past episodes as well. And it certainly is true. I mean, we should all be primarily concerned with defense of ourselves and defense of our loved ones. Is it noble and good to defend any innocent person? Absolutely. I think that's true as well. But as I said, you know, be careful involving yourself as a third party in other people's problems. You might not always understand the situation or the variables that are at play. Certainly, I can see a situation where an attacker is, you know, beating on somebody else, but that somebody else manages to gain the upper hand, and now they almost turn into the aggressor, and you step in thinking, you know, you're helping out someone, and you actually help out who was the initial aggressor of the situation. So be mindful. You know, I would say that if I could, I would want to be of help to somebody. Would I put my own life in jeopardy to do so? That's going to depend on the situation, you know. And that's really another tenet I think that should come out of this podcast episode today is how important it is to look at the situation and try to, you know, take in as much information as possible so that you can hopefully make the right decision. Both from, you know, kind of tying into the mindset sort of thing, Jacob, or at least looking at, okay, what's going on here, trying to understand the situation. But secondly, from a tactical analysis as well, if I get involved here, you know, I'm confident I'm making the right decision as far as, you know, who needs help and who is the aggressor. Now, tactically, is there a way I can do so and be effective and not put anybody else at risk? And also not put myself at risk. Because obviously if I get myself killed, it doesn't do anybody a bit of good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. In September 2015 in Houston, you'll remember this one, Riley, a concealed carrier pulls up into an intersection at the scene of a carjacking. And he decides to intervene. So he jumps out of his truck. He's got his firearm with him. He has a concealed carry license. Concealed handgun license, as they would have been called at that time in Texas. And he intervenes in the carjacking, pulls out his gun, and starts firing. He starts shooting. And he actually shot the victim, the driver, the person who, the car owner who was being carjacked, was hit. And so this is the kind of example of a place where, you know, maybe he was justified in engaging. Maybe he felt like he was in a position where he could do so safely, but did he tactically approach it in the sense of, how do I do this correctly? How do I do this to take care of people? There are absolutely instances where we make bad decisions.
Yep. Indeed, there are. Continuing the conversation, I think there's a major assumption to make at this point here, and that is that for much of what we're going to be discussing the rest of this episode, we have to assume a prolonged gunfight is occurring because, you know, typically these types of situations, I mean, so often it is, bad guy attacking good guy, and they don't last very long. So mm-hmm. You're probably not going to have a chance to respond. And, right, yeah. By the time you might get there, by the time you get your gun out, the situation's over. And by the way, a caution here, because you might go, you might make the decision, I need to intervene. But by the time you're able to position yourself and arm yourself to be able to intervene, the situation could be over. And this is sometimes, I think, a challenge for some people, is to know when to turn the switch off once they've made the decision to engage. Mm-hmm. I just shared a news story with our internal group of folks here last night from Fox News. Probably report on this in our Monday episode or something, about a homeowner who's charged with manslaughter for shooting at home invasion suspects. And his problem is that he basically chased them outside and then continued firing at them as they were making the getaway. And he struck one of them, and that person later died. Now he's charged with manslaughter. And you know, I suspect he didn't know how or when to shut that switch off.
Or was even incapable, you know, because I mean, by incapable, I mean simply that he was, his body, his physiology was inclined to continue to engage until it was completely over, no matter whether he wanted to stop or not. He didn't have the opportunity to stop and think, right? Like, oh, wait, maybe I should stop. You know, I mean, I'm sure in hindsight, he would be the first person to say, yeah, I shouldn't have done that. Or if in advance you had described the situation, he'd probably be like, yeah, I wouldn't do that. But
yep.
Caught up in the moment, right? That's what you mean.
Yep, absolutely. And it does happen. So beware of that. Now, another situation where I think probably people almost fantasize to a degree about, well, you know, I'm a CCWer, I've got my permit, I got my gun, I'm packing it around, I'm a, you know, model citizen, and you know, and you might have a tendency to fantasize about, I'm in the grocery store, I'm in the movie theater, I'm at, you know, name the place, at the airport or whatever, and an active shooting takes place where you've got all these people. And you've got someone who's intent on hurting as many people as he can, and you think, I'm going to engage, because if I don't, more people are going to get killed, including maybe myself. And, you know, now these situations are rare, but obviously they do happen. We just had recently the situation in Fort Lauderdale at the airport. And so these types of situations might tend to be the more likely situation where things are prolonged a bit. Depending on how intent the perpetrator is on hurting people, how much ammunition he has, you know, and the ability he might have to continue firing his weapons. So, you know, there's that situation as well. But regardless, a lot of the strategies, tactics, ideas, and thoughts that we're going to offer now, it would apply whether it's that situation or just about any other situation, I think.
Yeah, and I was going to add, too, that, you know, for those who are listening, Riley meant no negative connotation with the word fantasize. There's nothing wrong at all. In fact, debatably, it's encouraged to mentally think through some of those scenarios and think about the ifs and the buts and the ands and what one might do in response. So, you know, there's no negative connotation associated with thinking through those things.
Well, you're right in that, although I do think that there are I truly do believe there are people out there that fantasize, that like wish they could have that opportunity to do that and to be that hero. If that's the case, I hope that you'll check yourself. Now, I imagine these sorts of scenarios all the time. It's my day-to-day routine. Anytime I leave the house, anytime even inside the house, and I think, you know, just at random moments, thoughts will pop into my head. Well, what if this happened right now? How would I handle it? You know what I mean? And that's really what I mean. Yeah. As far as fantasize, I appreciate your clarification, Jacob, in that I'm running through these mental exercises and trying to make sure that I have the correct and proper mindset developed so that hopefully I can respond effectively. And we know how important having, you know, that mindset, mental repetitions, mental exercises, we know how important all that is. We've talked about it before and made a big deal about it. So, you know, be doing that. And I think so often, like I said, people will focus on, well, it's going to happen in this big, you know, crowded place, which in reality, more incidences occur, you know, between, you know, in they're not mass shootings. So in fact, Jacob, it's crazy, you know, just in the last day, news here locally in Denver. Last night sometime, a contract security officer for RTD, that's the Regional Transportation District here in Denver, you know, that manages all the buses and railway lines and stuff for public transportation. He was shot and killed last night downtown. Not a lot of details as to what happened. They had that suspect in custody. And then also this morning at 5 a.m. in Wheat Ridge, which is, for folks that don't know, and you may not necessarily know where Jacob and I live, not that we want you to know where we live, but Wheat Ridge is basically perfectly halfway in between where Jacob lives and where I live. And it's not necessarily a rough part of town, right? And at 5 a.m. this morning, a woman was shot and wounded in the shoulder as she was trying to withdraw money from an ATM machine. And so I'm thinking about these sorts of things, and I'm thinking, golly, you know, what if that woman was, you know, maybe she was armed. We don't know. But, you know, what if she had actually been able to defend herself properly as opposed to just being a victim? Or the security guard last night. And I can't remember if those RTD officers, you see actual officers that are, you know, representatives of the city or whatever. And I know they're carrying guns, and I don't know if some of the contract guys are carrying guns or not. And I kind of think maybe he wasn't. I don't know. Kind of unfortunate, you know, set of circumstances have happened recently here, but it's more fuel to the fire in my mind as I'm thinking through all these possible scenarios. So let's switch now to, there's really two ways we got to talk about what to do when there's multiple concealed carriers involved in a situation. Now, one situation is where you arrive onto a scene where another CCWer has already engaged a threat.
And I'll clarify that even more broadly. You arrive on a scene where two people are shooting at each other.
You're right. That is...
Or one, or even just one. Right? You arrive on a scene where someone is shooting at someone.
Fair point. I mean, that is correct, because we have to assume we're arriving on the scene, and we don't know what's going on just yet. And then the other situation is where you are engaging a threat. In this case, we would hopefully know. I mean, I'm the actor, and I have what I perceive to be a threat, and I'm engaging that threat. But now another person shows up to the scene and appears to or is beginning to also engage in the situation. Now, that could be them engaging the threat that you're also engaging or engaging you. And, of course, that's what we're trying to avoid here. So, but that's the two scenarios where, one, you're kind of the third party. You're the outside on the outside looking in. And the other situation, you're on the inside, and you got to be aware of what's outside. And Jacob, you labeled a situation where you're the third party as being proactive. In other words, like you're not already involved, and so you're choosing to involve yourself. In the other situation, mm-hmm. you're already involved, so you have to react to whatever additional variables come into that picture.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah, that I think that's how I best think of them. Is it's like, well, am I being proactive by inserting myself, or am I already inserted and being forced to react?
Right. So I'm going to start right off the bat by sharing the story I mentioned earlier where you are the proactive individual. So you're arriving to a scene where other people are already engaged in a conflict, okay? And we assume that weapons are probably involved because, I mean, although they might not necessarily be. I mean, remember that in that Florida incident where the officer was involved, it was a physical altercation, although the officer does have a weapon, and if that suspect is able to get a hold of that, it turns ugly very fast. But you arrive onto a scene, and we'll assume, you know, you see an altercation is going on. Perhaps weapons are involved. You don't know who is doing what to who or why. You've got to figure that out. Now, the story is, a few years ago, back when I was still working in construction, I had a business, and we were remodeling. Actually, I was by myself. It was fairly late. It was about 10 or 10:30 at night, and I was working late, had a deadline, was finishing some drywall stuff. And I hear something going on outside, like muffled yelling type stuff, right? And I go, what's going on? And I peek my head out around a corner, and you know, the store that I'm remodeling has a glass storefront like many businesses do. So I'm able to see right through the window. And this is what I see. Right out that window is a parking lot. And it's late, so there's a few cars parked out there. One of them is my own work truck. And then there's just a handful of other cars. There's a restaurant in the area, and it's still open for business at that time. And so anyway, that's the scene. And from the left, at an angle, moving towards the center of my vision, I see a man wearing a flannel shirt, blue jeans. He's probably 5'8", 5'10". You know, he was definitely shorter than me by several inches. Dark hair, He's got like a goatee or beard or something. You know, like I remember this. You know, I took the description. I was like, crap, what's going on here? Because what is he doing? He's kind of half walking, half running fairly rapidly towards the center of the parking lot, which actually was in the direction of my truck. And he's got a gun fully extended, pointing towards, you know, the center of the parking lot, pointed towards really kind of like this car that was a little bit in front of and a couple of spaces to the side of my truck. And I'm going, holy crap. You know, that's what I first see. And so, I mean, you can imagine, right, that some people might go, oh my goodness, you know, there's a guy with a gun out there. And did I have a gun with me? Yeah, I had a gun with me. But I didn't run right out there to engage. No way. I sat tight. And I still had a pallet of drywall mud, which, by the way, I'm sure would be excellent cover. Several boxes thick, several boxes high, you know, like it's going to stop bullets. And I get down and my jacket is laying over top that drywall. And I had put my gun, I'd taken it off of me while I was working because it's really messy. You know, you're doing drywall mud, and I'd stuck it underneath my jacket. And so I get down behind that pallet and I've got my gun in my hand and I'm just watching. And it only takes about 5 seconds before I see two uniformed cops come from a different direction. But still, it's like, oh, okay, is that guy going to shoot at those cops or what's going on here? Well, then suddenly I see movement underneath the car and there's a dude hiding underneath this car and he wiggles himself out on the opposite side and takes off running. And then I see all three of these gentlemen with guns drawn chase after him. And then I go, I'll bet you the guy in the flannel shirt is an undercover cop. Mm-hmm. See what I mean? And so I often refer back to that as like the perfect scenario to describe a situation like this where I'm going, whoa, you know, you've got my attention. The heart's starting to pound a little bit because I know, you know, some crap is about to hit the fan. And, you know, but, you know, Jacob, you as listening to, you know, as a listener to my experience, what would you take from that?
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing I took the most is the number one thing you did good is wait. I mean, your patience was the key, right? I mean, everything resolved itself or revealed itself in time because you were patient. Patience was everything in this case. And I'll add that not just general patience, like, huh, those two guys are shooting at each other. Like, I should hang out and see what, like, one of them dies. You know, like, not that kind of patient, but the patience of, it at this point, I don't have to involve myself. Like, I can just observe for a minute. And it's worth it. Like there's some trade-off in just waiting and observing. And I think that's the biggest thing that I take from this is that time. I mean, it just purely came down to, you know, the ticker on the watch going around the circle and everything revealing itself.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. And that's right. And that, sorry, darn cold. Exercising patience is very key when you are on the outside looking in. Because there's a story that's being told there and you got to figure it out. I mean, my face would have been plastered all over the local news here and probably nationally had I run out there and started engaging this undercover plainclothes cop, you know? And yeah,
you would not have been doing anyone a favor.
Besides the fact I probably ended up dead because there was two other cops that were very nearby. And so... Yeah, you know, it would have brought a lot of bad to the concealed carry community and to gun owners as a whole. It would, you know, give ammunition to the anti-gunners out there that say, see, you know, it turns into the Wild Wild West when you put these guns in the hands of all these citizens out there. And so the other thing I would say, you know, take from this is, you know, my very first reaction was, oh, fetch, take cover. Right. And I looked around and went, that pallet, you know, it was like three or four boxes deep, cut, you know, three or four boxes wide and three or four boxes tall of drywall mud. And I'm like, perfect. Bam. Get down behind that. Because that stuff's dense, you know. And and so, yeah, I mean, that's the other thing. And that's going to become, I think, really critical for some of you, you know, helping you to understand one of the other things I'm going to explain as a tip and suggestion to trying to determine what's going on in a situation. And maybe I'll just go there now. watch for body language, because an aggressor, in other words, someone that's initiated an attack, is going to have very aggressive and oftentimes will be, they'll kind of throw caution to the wind, so to speak, where they're out in the open. They don't really care who they hurt, how they hurt them. And sometimes they, you know, don't care so much for their own safety or well-being.
Yeah. Nothing to lose, right? Kind of attitude.
Yeah. And that happens all the time. And then the other, and so then along with that, you see someone else involved and they're in an engagement with this other individual who's acting very aggressively, but this other person is taking cover while they're, you know, exchanging shots or whatever. You look at that situation. I'm not going to say that's always 100% the case, you know, going to be good guy is the one taking cover, bad guy is the one out in the open. But I would certainly hope that the good guy has enough sense and enough training to go, I need to find cover, you know, as I engage this guy.
And, well, it's not just about sense and training, in my opinion. It's about like logical instinctive reaction based on the mindset with which I entered the fight, right?
Right.
If you're the aggressor, you are by nature aggressive. And if you are the defender, you are by nature defensive. And so yep. I mean, to me, it's just that core.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And that's, so in tying with my story, exactly. I mean, that was my first reaction is, fetch. Get down, take cover, you know, because who knows what's going to happen next, you know? Like, I'm not going to stand there like an idiot and wait to catch a bullet. So, anyway, that I think that's a really key thing when you're trying to evaluate the story of a situation is look at those visual cues, okay? And, oh, how is that person acting versus how is this person acting? And, you know, not that that's going to tell you the whole story, but keep in mind, as is the case in, I mean, this is what every good law enforcement officer should know. Like, one little thing is not always going to tell them, you know, everything they need to know. But it's you know, they notice this guy is, you know, has a certain tattoo on his arm or something or on his face. And they notice that he's got a bulge, you know, in the back of his pants. They notice that he is, you know, he's interacting with somebody in a whatever. You know, like, it's all of these things. Adding up that then starts to tell you with pretty good high probability and good certainty, this person over here is probably not a good guy. And that guy over there is probably a good guy. And then you can, you know, and then we kind of go to step two. And step two would be maybe listen for verbal cues. Mm-hmm. Right.
And we'll talk more about this on the other side, on the reactive side too. But certainly, if I'm about to insert myself into a situation, you know, auditory, you know, cues are everything. I shouldn't say everything, but they're huge. They're huge, right? If one person's saying, stop, put it down, or, you know, why are you doing this?
Right.
You know, I mean, that would be pretty indicative, right? If the other person's like, die, or like, you know, are you Muslim? You know, I mean, like all those kinds of little things.
Right.
Are going to be cues that are like, wow, like, okay. So listening is huge, and, you know, using the ears and allowing them to work and having your brain tell your ears to turn on and pick up what's going on.
Yeah. You got to paint this picture, and you got to use every tool at your disposal, auditory, visual, all of that. And you're exactly right. Listen to what, you know, if there's anything being said. Listen to what is being said. By the way, this is a really good support to the argument as to why, regardless if you're law enforcement or a civilian, you should give verbal commands in situations like this. And this is one of the reasons why law enforcement train, you know, why they suggest how important this is, because, you give verbal commands both because, one, it's, you know, okay, obviously, if they will comply to your commands, then that's good. You know, that's better than having to actually use force to begin with. Secondly, though, it communicates to those in the area something's wrong, something's going on, and it provides a context for anything that might follow next. And so, you know, you have a threat that you have to deal with, and they pull a weapon or whatever, and you say, drop the weapon, you know. Drop the weapon. Show me your hands. Regardless of it, you know, that's not impersonating a police officer by you doing that. It might make you sound like a police officer, by the way, if you use the correct, you know, verbiage, which, I mean, I'm pretty sure you're not going to be charged with impersonation by using that language, but it might not be a bad idea to use that language because then others around you are going to go, oh, hey, this dude apparently knows what's going on. And he issued these commands. And the next thing I know, bullets are flying. So it kind of, that's part of that painting that picture. So you want to be listening for that. Mm-hmm. Now, mm-hmm. you might also consider yourself giving verbal commands.
Yep, I'm glad you brought that up because that's the other part. You know, if I'm walking into the situation, if I'm choosing to engage and I'm dealing with somebody who's armed, maybe two people who are armed and shots are flying and I have to make a decision about what to do, you know, by simply me just asking, I know that sounds like overly simple, but it can be very effective, right? Like just asking, like, are you a threat? You know, like, why, you know, put your hands down, put your weapon down, stop. You know, by just me giving commands, I might get some very immediate feedback. Like if they point the gun at me, that's going to, you know, talk about body language. We're going to talk more about that in a minute. But if they look real scared, if they put the gun down, if mm-hmm. they start, you know, if they keep the gun trained on the other person, like, no, they're the threat, you know, or whatever. Yeah. I mean, just a variety of things are going to happen if I start giving commands to whoever's closest or to everybody.
Well, and let me tell you what a criminal is more likely to do when you start issuing commands. And you know, maybe to that point, they were completely unaware of you being in the area as well. And next thing they know, they hear, drop the weapon. And you don't care who you're saying that to. And what are they more inclined to do? They're more inclined to go, whoa, hey, there might be another threat over here to my right or to my left that I need to address now. They are more likely to turn and aim their weapon or turn their attention, you know, as far as their threat, towards you, as opposed to someone that's not intent on causing harm or committing a crime. They hear that, you know, drop the weapon. They're going to probably both parties might first think, oh, that might be a cop, because that's what a cop would say. Drop your weapon, show me your hands. And so the law-abiding citizen is the one that's more likely to comply with the command and not turn towards that individual thinking they might be a cop, and the bad guy's going to go, crap, cop, kill him.
Yeah, he'll engage the authority every time, right?
Exactly.
So those are real key things. And to kind of cycle off of that, another really important thing to me, perhaps the most important in my opinion, like the number one thing that I'm thinking about if I have to proactively insert myself into a situation is who's pointing a gun at me.
Right.
And so, and where are their firearms pointed? So muzzle direction to me is probably one of the biggest things I'd be paying attention to in this situation. I'd really want to know where guns are pointed. You know, a good guy, should there be one in a situation, the good citizen who's actively, you know, trying to stop a threat, would only point that firearm at the threat, right? That's the only direction it would be pointed. Whereas a threat, you know, an attacker, an aggressor, if they're just intent on hurting people, then that gun's going to be moving around. They're just going to be looking for targets, right? You know, not just the other party. And as you mentioned, if I start giving commands, you know, who's going to train their gun on me? And that changes the game completely, right? If your firearm's pointed at me, for one, I better have cover, side note, and be ready to engage. But to me, like the number one thing in my Jacob brain, if I'm inserting myself into an active gunfight, is where the gun's pointed.
Yep. Yeah, very good. And finally, I think, and you actually shared this thought, and I for some reason, I mean, it probably just made sense to me. I probably, you know, just took it for granted, because I think I would instinctively notice this sort of thing anyway. But I think it does bear, you know, that we should mention this on the podcast. And so I was glad you mentioned it to me. And that was to look for uniforms and or insignia or anything that might tip you off as to who is who. I used the example in our pre-show prep of, you know, maybe you're in a convenience store and there's an active situation going on, but you see one of them has the uniform with the logo and everything of that store. Well, more than likely, the store clerk, and they may very well be able to, and they are in fact carrying a gun, and they're using it to try to defend themselves in the situation. Now, most convenience store situations end very rapidly, but But looking for that uniform, looking to identify who is who and where they're from, that's also a really important visual indicator.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And it could be, I mean, it doesn't, you don't have to read the name on the shirt. Like, to, you know, sometimes it's just indicatively like that looks like that person came to work today.
Yeah.
That might be a good little tip, you know, that would kind of play into your overall fast, you know, infinite, you know, assessment that your brain's going to make.
Yeah. Well, and the other person, you know, you might have someone that's fairly cleanly dressed and groomed. Like you said, like they just came to work or they had something important that they were doing or they were going to. And the other party involved, and this might not necessarily always be the case, but, you know, think about it. Remember, and we're putting these, you know, single variables together with all the other variables, and that's painting the picture. But maybe this other person involved is wearing the classic hoodie, which, you know, I'm sorry, it is a stereotype, but it's a very true one in a lot of situations. He's wearing a hoodie that's pulled up over his face. Maybe he's got a bandana over his lower part of his face. Or, you know, it just is apparent that this other party to the situation is taking some effort to conceal who they are. So mm-hmm. It all goes together. I think, you know, There could be some other things that we might mention. I don't know, but I think that's a pretty good list of what you might do when you're the proactive CCW, where you are considering inserting yourself into or trying to make the decision whether to insert yourself into an active engagement, typically where weapons are involved. So just to rehash, exercise patience, listen for verbal cues, watch for visual cues, watch where the gun is pointed, who's pointing at who, give commands, and then, of course, pay close attention to who does what when you do so, including where the gun is pointed, which we just touched on, and looking for uniforms and insignia and so forth. Now, mm-hmm. with those in mind, it should give folks a pretty good idea of, you know, it kind of almost tells you what you might want to be considering doing when you're the one of the people involved in a situation and you're concerned about other CCWers or even cops coming into the situation.
Yeah, it do all those things that someone else, we just told everyone else to be looking for, right?
Right.
So, you know, the first one that we obviously talked about is giving verbal commands. You know, whether regardless of which side of this coin you're on, giving commands is always good. I was actually on Combat? I think it was on Combat. It was some book I've been listening to recently, and the author cited a large percentage of school shootings where the shooting was stopped because law enforcement or somebody simply issued a verbal command to the shooter to stop.
Yeah.
Like verbal commands are extraordinarily effective, statistically speaking.
Yeah.
So giving verbal commands, stop, put the weapon down, stop, please stop. You know, those are the kind of things that are going to help someone else arriving on the scene identify you as the good guy.
Yep.
Or gal. The GG.
Right. Yeah, that's exactly right. And we touched on that already as far as why we give commands and the context that creates for any other witnesses involved, then it makes more sense for them as to what's going on and who is who when these sorts of situations occur. I mean, someone that is an aggressor and intent on doing harm is not going to give commands that sound like, you know, drop your weapon, stop, show me your hands. And in fact, I dare say that in a lot of situations, even in mass shooting situations, a lot of these perpetrators of these crimes, these horrific crimes, really don't, by a large account, really don't say much. And if they do, it's something like, you know, it's something that makes it very clear that their intent, you know, it's like, do you believe in God? You know, that was a question that the Columbine shooters, you know, would ask students, do you believe in God? Asked one of them, right? You know, yes, you know, and we'll pray to your God or whatever, and, you know, shot her. Stuff like that. So, but by and large, a lot of these situations, there's very little that comes from the mouths of these shooters. Mm-hmm. I think they almost have to. I think they have to emotionally detach themselves from what they're doing. And by interacting with people in such a way where they're exchanging communication. I mean, it starts to humanize people again, you know, and a lot of times they got to picture people as being objects for them to be able to emotionally go through with what they're doing.
Now, here's one I put in our prep as we were talking about this, and I've been trying to decide how to explain or describe this concept. But what I wrote, my note here is communicating with dispatch. And while it may not always seem reasonable or feasible, I do think it's very important if you're the CCWer who's involved in the firefight, if you're actively engaged with the threat, then one of the best things you can do is somehow get a communication out to emergency dispatch that you are, in fact, involved. And maybe you're not even the one making that call. Maybe you're giving a command to somebody, call 911 now. But making sure that somehow there's some communication with the law enforcement, I think that's going to go a long way. It may or may not do a lot to protect you from the other guy on the other side of the shopping mall who runs over and has no idea who's talking to dispatch about what, but it certainly would go a long way if law enforcement shows up, or, you know, anything like that. So I do think there's something to be said about making sure that dispatch is somehow being communicated with, whether you hit 911 and set your phone down, or if you're actively having a conversation, or you just verbally command someone else to do it. As much or as little as you're able to do there is definitely going to be helpful in this situation.
Yeah. I would definitely say if I was, you said two words I thought were really key, actively involved. To me, that means I've got gun in hand and bullets are flying. I don't know that I'd be so inclined to grab my phone and try to multitask while I've got this threat immediately in front of me. But definitely there's a lot of value. And plus, it's part of that giving verbal commands and creating that context of the situation, you know, along with, show me your hands, drop your weapon. And then you're yelling over your shoulder because you're aware that somebody's in that direction, you know, call for help, get help, call 911. And it's just even more, you know, context as to who's who. And plus, then we're making an effort to get help there as quickly as possible, which is always very, very key. So good tip there as well, I think. Now, once again, being aware of muzzle direction. And we talked about, you know, in the proactive situation, how important it is to watch for the gun's muzzle directions. And here's something else I would say. You're actively engaged in a situation and you hear from somewhere, you know, your left, your right, behind you, doesn't matter, you know, a person doing the right thing that we just got done describing a moment ago, and they're saying, you know, drop the weapon, show me your hands. And you don't know whether they're talking to you or to this threat that you're trying to engage. Well, if, and this is a sometimes, you know, it might be a difficult thing. I'm going to say if it doesn't pose any threat to you to comply, then you should probably try to comply because that's going to help them know who's who in the situation. Now, that's also, I think, a reason why finding cover, good cover that you can use is so important, so that hopefully you have some sort of means of defense to, whether it is to provide communication, whether it is to reach out, you know, and somehow get a hold of dispatch and 911 and so forth, whether it is to, you know, communicate with someone else that shows up on the scene and they're saying stuff like, you know, what's going on here, and drop, you know, show me your hands, drop your weapons. You know, hopefully you've got good cover that you can use and rely on so that you're not immediately in danger to take your mind off the threat for just a moment. And here's what I would suggest. If you hear something that indicates to you that a good guy or a cop or someone that, you know, may have showed up on the scene, then, and you feel like it's imperative that you show that you are disengaging, meaning you are, you know, going to put your weapon down or something. Now, maybe you might not be inclined to put your weapon down because that could pose greater threat to you. Well, here's what I'd suggest. And it's not hard to do. You go from a standard pistol grip on your gun to pinching, whether it's the slide or the grip, somewhere near where you kind of naturally grab it is probably what I would do. And pinch that between your finger, your index finger, and your thumb. And if you turn and you show in profile with the other hand raised slightly, whatever, you know, and you're showing to them, okay, I'm complying, I'm the good guy here because I'm not pointing my gun at you. Like, A gun in profile always looks less threatening than when you see that muzzle pointing at you. And it was actually a Navy SEAL friend of mine that suggested this. He also trains a lot of law enforcement and stuff now and talks about it. That was his suggestion. Pinch that between your thumb and finger. That looks very non-threatening. Show it in profile. Other hand raised. Okay. And you don't necessarily have to, you know, they may still tell you, put the gun down. And if it's law enforcement, you know, now you're handing the situation over to them, perhaps. Right? But at least you still have the option that if you have to go back to engagement, you can still rotate right back into your grip and go to engage. So, you know, that's just a little tip, a little, you know, something to think about. And I think it has some validity.
Yeah. And I also will say a lot of that will come with muscle memory. And by a lot of that, I don't necessarily mean the pinch move and, you know, showing it in profile. That's something probably should be practiced and thought about. But just generally speaking, the way you should be handling your firearm when engaging a threat should feel natural if you've been training. And so what I mean by that is, you know, if you're the kind of person, the only training you do is you go to a range, you set up your little lockbox on the little range table and you open it up, you pull the gun down, you set it on the table. And when you're ready to shoot, you pick it up and you fire it at the target. Then you set it back down on the table. You don't really have any muscle memory at all relative to the handling of a firearm in a situation where you're moving, where you're using cover, where you do those things. So if on the other hand, if you regularly train with moving while shooting, if you regularly train with the use of cover, with shooting from different kinds of positions, if that's stuff you've trained, you've over time built very good muscle memory relative to how to manage that firearm when you come back into close quarters or when you have to move or things like that, and different situations. So I know that's not very specific, but I just generally I'm imagining in my head and thinking about how I would be handling my firearm. And it should be very obvious to you, Riley, if you show up on the scene, that I'm not shooting at innocent people who are running by, that I'm only engaging one threat. And when I'm not engaging that threat, that I have it in a non-threatening position where it's not hurting anyone. And that, you know, it just should be part of the way we train should teach you that kind of muscle memory.
Yep. Agreed. You know, I think to kind of sum this up and summing up the kind of reactive position of the scenario, number one, if possible, find cover and use it. One that looks good for you and makes you a harder target to hit. If you don't have available cover, consider making yourself as small a target to hit. Sometimes getting in the prone position, I mean, while it may not always have applicability in every situation, and definitely limits your ability for mobility and stuff like that. But so it's always contextual and always depends on the situation, right? But, you know, getting down in a crouch, whatever it is, there's a lot of things you can do to appear as though you're taking cover and making yourself a smaller target to hit. Okay, so anyway, find cover, use it. Number two, give verbal commands. You're engaged with a threat. Give the commands necessary to try to disengage that threat. That also looks really good for you in a court of law. I told him to put his weapon down, to stop, you know, and there's witnesses that can attest to that, you know. So besides the legal aspect, then you're also providing this context for everybody else. It's a witness and it might be involved or might involve themselves. Pay attention to your muzzle direction, and absolutely under no circumstance point your muzzle towards a law enforcement officer or someone else that shows up on scene, and they are also using the language that you yourself should be using, okay? Or they're doing certain things, using certain body language. They're also, you know, taking cover as well. And meanwhile, you've got this dude that's kind of more or less out in the open, and he's acting very threatening or aggressive towards everybody else. Pay attention to the body language. That's pretty much what I'd have to say, I think, in this situation. As far as summing that all up. And one last comment, and we've talked about it before, you know, we do get the question so often, you know, what about when an officer is going to show up on the scene? And I've said time and time again, and I've looked at a bunch of different, you know, police videos showing this sort of situation playing out. And I'm not saying this is guaranteed, this is how it's always going to play out, but so often, I mean, law enforcement, honestly, They're well trained in this regard, and they're trained to show up. They're trained to give verbal commands. They're trained to look for all the same things we've been talking about in this episode. And they're not just going to show up and start shooting you. Okay.
Yeah, it just doesn't happen. It's like that nasty, one of those nasty myths in our industry that won't go away.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So, you know, I think when you are the reactive party of the situation, meaning you're already involved in the engagement, you do these things that we've mentioned to you, it's going to be pretty apparent to law enforcement or anybody else showing up that, and then of course you're complying with commands. And that is definitely something we've talked about in our kind of dealing with law enforcement episodes, is that you hear a command, drop the weapon, we'll immediately comply. Because if you don't, then you got a problem. And I think that goes without saying. Any last thoughts from you, Jacob?
No, I hope that everyone found this helpful and valuable. And if you have other thoughts that we didn't express here, I invite you to follow this link through to the website for where this podcast post is and write comments or just go to our contact page and send us your thoughts.
Absolutely. And I would also encourage too, that folks, if you find this type of information valuable, which I think this is really good information, I could be a little bit biased as well, but but if you find this valuable, if you enjoyed this episode today, please consider, if you haven't done so already, going and subscribing to the podcast. Go to your podcast app, go to what, maybe you're using Overcast or Podcast Addict or one of these other podcasting apps, but somehow go and subscribe. And you don't want to miss any great content. But also, I think there's another benefit too, Jacob.
I'm all ears.
Oh well, you were the one. I'm joking. You were the one that was talking about it the other day. The other benefit though is that you'll be notified a lot of times. A lot of these apps will notify you when an episode goes live, and that's really cool. And the other thing is that you can stop midway through listening to an episode, and it'll resume and pick up right where you left off. So if you're still listening through the browser, whether it's on your mobile device or through your computer browser to the podcast, you're really missing out, because you can stop and pause and resume and even change the speed that you listen to the podcast at. So anyway, please consider going.
Yeah, you should hear Riley's voice. You should hear Riley's voice at 3x speed. It's awesome.
Do I sound like Mickey Mouse?
Another benefit, not quite. Another benefit to subscribing to our podcast versus listening to it in the browser or just when it's convenient is you can also often bookmark things. So you might be listening to one of our episodes and you hear something, you're like, oh yeah, and like you can add a bookmark from your podcast app, and then later you can find that very quickly and not have to wonder where that was. So there's just a lot of benefits to using an actual made for the purpose app on your phone and subscribing to our podcast.
Unfortunately, I don't think you could do that in the native iPhone podcast app. So
no bookmarks?
I don't at least not that I've ever used. So I'm gonna have to investigate that now. Good tip, Jacob. Now before we forget, today's episode is brought to you by Guardian Nation. Forget all the other things that we are constantly telling you about Guardian Nation. If you need one really easy, no-brainer reason to join Guardian Nation, it would be the quarterly box. Every 3 months we ship each member a box of tactical gear that is worth at least the minimum exact cost of 3 months worth of membership. So all of your membership dues are essentially returned to you each quarter in really awesome gear. Besides all the other bonuses and benefits that come to being a member of Guardian Nation, such as all the training opportunities, once a year certificate for training course. Lots of great stuff.
You want to hear a fun story, Riley?
Let's hear it.
So I got done with a class this last weekend, and after the class, someone's like, okay, so like, how do we get more training? And I was like, well, some instructors are more expensive than others if you want to get additional training, blah, blah, blah. And she's like, well, how about you? Like, spending a whole day with you, at the range, like 8 hours, like what? And I'm like, yeah, I'm kind of expensive. I'm always hesitant to give people prices, but she pushed me and I was like, well, that's going to be about $500 and there's going to be a group of people for me to spend a whole day like that. But you can find it cheaper. And she's like, okay. And so then we start, it kind of passes and I start talking about Guardian Nation. And I mentioned that as part of being a member of Guardian Nation, every year you get a gift certificate to take one class for free from any instructor in our network. And bam, her hand goes right up, including that one class with you for 8 hours. And I'm like, yes.
Nice.
So for her, that was it. It's like, forget all the other Guardian Nation stuff. The fact that I get a gift certificate once a year to take a class, and that class could be worth $500, I'm in.
Bam. Done. Cool. Well, check it out at guardiannation.com to learn more. On to picks of the week. Jacob.
The Gator cover. So recently I was cruising down the road in my awesome Tacoma. I had somebody in the truck with me, my good friend Brandon Scott. And we were talking about how awesome my truck was and how it made me seem much cooler than before when I was driving a loser vehicle. And
a Subaru.
Subarus are actually awesome. I really like Subarus. I was just teasing. But Brandon says something like, yeah, the only thing that makes this truck better is if you had a cover. And I'm like, yeah, every time I go to research these covers, like I get lost in the minutia. Like there's so many websites and it's like confusing. And I just don't have the patience for that kind of crap. It's the kind of thing I would make someone else do for me. And he's like, well, I got it. He's like, I already know which one to get. And he's just like, this one right here. Like, just check, you know, boom. And it was done. And so I have the Gator cover and I installed it and it was a cinch to install. It's a cinch to use. And I'm very pleased with it.
Which one did you go with? A soft one, a hard one, retractable?
It's a folding. I think it's a soft folding one. So, I mean, it's relatively simple. I mean, I'm sure someone could take some big knife and cut through it or something. But all around it, I like it a lot, and I think it meets my need.
Funny thing is, Jacob, every single – like when you go to the website, gatorcovers.com, the first thing you see is like I think every truck they show – oh, no, I lied. This one's an F-150.
Yeah, most of the pictures are Tacomas. Yeah. So if you have a Tacoma, you really need Gator cover.
That's funny. Well, cool. Good pick. My pick is the WorkSharp guided sharpening system. And to be honest with you, I hadn't really heard of the company WorkSharp, but I was really impressed with this knife sharpening system. And there's a lot of clever engineering that's gone into this. The basic kit comes with 2 6-inch long, I think they're probably about an inch and a quarter wide diamond plates, 2 different grits. So you got a coarse and a fine. And then there's this other piece that, and all this is kind of like modular. So you can like pull one thing out and put another thing into this sort of base, whatever, you know. And this other thing you can drop in there is a 2-grit ceramic rod. So you can really hone things down nice. And then there's also medium and small ceramic rods, you know, really, really fine, you know, narrow ones. So you can use those on your serrations on a lot of, you know, as a lot of knives have these days. Little angle guides, there's 17 degree and 20 degree angle guides. You know, I'm also looking at another one, which I might share in a future episode, that is a electric driven, you know, it's like a belt type sharpening system. But this one was really easy to use and frankly just did a really great job. And one of the key features is it has a pivoting feature. So if you're sharpening a curved blade, the surface will pivot as you're, you know, working your way from the base of the blade to the tip. It'll pivot and kind of follow that curvature. It's hard to describe, easier to just go and see and check out. So look for the link in the show notes to go pick up one of these WorkSharp guided sharpening systems. And I just sharpened one of my knives with it the other night, and whew, man, this is a sharp knife. So, and I know they've got additional things you can buy. There's different grits of the diamond plates you can get, and I think there's other accessories. I think there's even a leather. Drawing a blank all of a sudden. Strop. You can get a strop as well. So a lot of really cool accessories. Kind of a complete system. Very pleased with it. So check it out.
Yeah, and it's more affordable than I thought it would be based on your description.
Yeah. To be honest with you, I don't know what it cost. I was going to look it up because, Jacob, I think you were the one that gave it to me.
Yeah. It's pretty cool. Yeah, exciting.
So what's up next for you, man?
Shipping the Guardian Nation box. So February is a box month. We ship boxes to Guardian Nation members every February, May, August, and November. Ooh, that was kind of hard. And so February is a shipping month. Today's February 1st, so we're getting that box all ready to ship out. If you're listening to this and you have not yet joined Guardian Nation, there's no conceivable way you could qualify for the box I'm going to ship this month. So you're kind of out of luck for the February box. You're just too late. If you join now, you'd obviously be eligible for the next box, which is in May. But the Guardian Nation box we're shipping in February is going to be really awesome. It's going to have $165 worth of stuff. And obviously, 3 months of Guardian Nation costs only about $115. So these people are getting far more, you know, they're getting considerably more, you know, worth of gear than they ever gave us as a member. And so I'm pretty stoked to get it out the door. We should ship it in about a week and a half.
Awesome. That's exciting. And I know a lot of our members are going to be super excited because there's some really great stuff in this first box. it's so exciting because this is the first time we've ever done anything like this. And there's all these box programs out there and subscriptions and stuff. And Jacob, you have made it your mission to find like every gun or tactical related box subscription out there. And while there are a few decent ones out there, a lot of them are just junk. And a lot of them, you pay like some of like the monthly ones, you pay what, like $40 a month, and you end up getting like $42 worth of stuff.
And the stuff is worthless. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's some of these are really bad. And not to knock the conceptual idea of subscription boxes, because I think that's a cool idea and some of them are really good. But I will say this. I think there's two things that are unique about our box. The first one is that it is very much so firearm defense oriented, and I'm only aware of one other box that makes that claim, and it's really crappy. And the second thing that's unique about our box is when you subscribe to our box, you're actually subscribing to something much bigger than that. The box is just one of about a dozen benefits you receive as a member of Guardian Nation.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, good stuff there. And my up next is that I've got some great new videos and reviews coming soon. In fact, we're going to be spending the day at the range tomorrow working on one of those. So stay tuned. And finally, some of you are aware, because we announced it in our Monday episode of the podcast this past Monday, about our podcast giveaway, which we are doing to celebrate hitting our 1 year anniversary since launching the podcast, and also kind of, you know, to celebrate the fact that we're really about to hit 100 episodes in just a few episodes after our 1 year anniversary. So we've got this really great big podcast giveaway, and we're really only asking a very, very simple request so that you can qualify to be part of that giveaway. And that is to fill out a simple 10 question survey. And before I go any further, I just wanted to throw out there too, Jacob, our apologies for this past Monday. If you tried to access that survey from a mobile device, there was some weird little glitch. It worked fine on the computers, on laptops, desktops, whatever, but it wasn't working on mobile devices, and it took us a little while to figure that out. But we got it working now, so it all works. So if you went and tried it on Monday and you gave up, I'm sorry, but you can try it again, and don't miss it. Get signed up for our giveaway.
Yeah, it's really exciting. Odds right now of winning are still pretty good. There's about a little short of 200 entries into the giveaway, and we're giving away over $1,000 worth of prizes at this point. We've added some new prizes since Monday, so some pretty cool stuff. So Riley, here's what we currently have. And remember, not all these prizes are going to one winner. Every winner only gets one prize, so we're going to have a lot of different winners, which also dramatically increases your ability to your odds of winning, right? So here are the prizes. We're going to give away to one winner American Gun Law, which is a $97 online program designed to help you prepare for a legal incident related to a firearm. We're giving away to one winner the Mantis X training device, which is something we really love. It's a $150 product, and it works with a free app on your phone to tell you what you're doing when you break the trigger. It's really cool. We're giving away a bullet safe flexible body armor panel. It's really, really nice. It's lightweight, it's soft, but it stops all handgun calibers really effectively. It's a $90 value. We're giving away a Sports Authority double side access handgun safe. This is a $180 safe. It's really nice safe. Someone's going to win that. They're going to take it home. Our friend Gary has donated a Q-Series Stealth Holster and Mag Carrier Combo. It's a value of about $70. It's going to be really awesome, and obviously we'll get that for the gun that you want it for. We're going to give somebody a copy of The Traveler's Guide to the Firearm Laws 50 States. It's our best-selling book on our website. We sell thousands of copies. In fact, we've sold over 1,000 copies this month. We're going to give somebody the Brave Response Holster. It's our top-selling holster. It's a phenomenal concealment holster. It carries up to 3 spare mags. It's a $70 value. Our friends over at Culper Precision are going to give somebody a gift certificate for $100 in Cerakoting. So essentially, $100 will get you like your slide Cerakoted in one color, or a couple other little things. Or if you want, you could do a bigger job and just pay whatever it is above and beyond the $100. But it's $100 in Cerakote. So if you don't care about Cerakote, I promise someone will pay you for that thing. It's very valuable. And our friends over at Pig Lube have donated a 1 year supply of Pig Lube.
And so, what exactly is a 1 year supply? And this might be the first time people are hearing about Pig Lube on the podcast, so Pig Lube, you might need to explain what that is as well.
So pig lube is a lubrication, in a very traditional sense. They call it pig lube because it actually has bacon grease as an ingredient in the lubrication. But they've really have applied some amazing technology, and it's a really good lubricant for your guns to keep them running really well. They got some really cool videos to kind of explain how it works and things like that. So it's a really nice lubrication. I mean, a year supply of this is going to be basically 10 ounces. And the value of 10 ounces of this is $260. So it's actually one of the more valuable prizes that we're giving away in this whole giveaway.
Nice. Well, that's really cool. That's quite a list of prizes for our giveaway. It's really grown since Monday.
Yeah, there's 9 total right now, and I suspect we'll have a few more.
Yeah, absolutely. So there you go, folks. If you haven't done so already, go to concealedcarry.com/podcast giveaway. That'd be PodcastGiveaway. Podcast giveaway following the slash on concealedcarry.com. Link in the show notes, of course, as always. And it just occurred to me, Jacob, if there's anybody out there that is subscribed to the podcast or uses one of the apps to listen to it, and if they're not familiar with how to access the show notes from right within the podcast app itself, a lot of these apps allow you to get to pull up the show notes. Like if you see kind of the album or cover image of the podcast on the app and you tap on it, at least that's how it works on the iOS devices, and I think that's how it works in Overcast. You tap on it, and it brings up the show notes. So there's usually a way to access those very easily, and all the links and everything should work right there within the app as you're listening to this fantastic Concealed Carry podcast. So anyhow, I think that pretty much wraps it up for today, unless there's any last notes or things that you want to throw out there, Jacob.
Just stick to your guns, people.
Absolutely. So with that, thank you so much for listening. Thanks for this wonderful past year. We thank you so much for that. It's part of the reason for doing this giveaway. Don't miss that. Please go also check out guardiannation.com. Consider signing up there as well. And so without dragging this out any further, thanks for listening. Train hard, train safe. Be good citizens out there, and hopefully you'll take the ideas from this podcast today to heart. So catch you later. Reminded that laws vary from place to place, and we encourage listeners to seek local legal advice to understand applicable laws. The Concealed Carry Podcast, Concealed Carry Inc., ConcealedCarry.com, and their affiliates strive to share insights and stories about firearm-related incidents and laws, but things could be different where you live, or laws may have changed by the time you listen to this. We cannot be held liable for your actions based on the information shared in this podcast.